The Catholic Channel SiriusXM 129 presents Just Love with your host, Monsignor Kevin Sullivan, Executive Director of Catholic Charities of the Archdiocese of New York.
Hey, welcome to Just Love. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. Thanks for being with us on our weekly conversation where we kind of, our whole framework is just love, just do it. Just love God, just love your neighbor, just love yourself, and our world will be more just and it will be more compassionate. You know, Tom, they kind of, February is kind of the doldrum month in which, like, everybody says, oh, you get the February blues and things like that, but this February is a little exciting. I mean, now I know that some people are going to say, well, it's what's exciting about it. Well, I'll tell you what's exciting about it is, one, we have the Olympics, and we're going to talk a little bit about that in the middle of the show, that the Olympics are going on, and we've had a little bit of controversy because they're in Korea, and we got the potential danger of kind of nuclear weapons with North Korea and the rapprochement between South and North. And so that's kind of a little bit exciting. And so we're going to hear a little bit later on something about the Olympics. It's also Black History Month, which, you know, I think sometimes gets a little bit overlooked, but we're going to raise it up today. And I'm delighted that we're going to have on as a guest in just a few minutes, Dominic Jones, who is the Executive Director of Boys and Girls Club of Harlem. And I'm delighted we're going to be speaking with her. And so we're going to talk a little bit about Black History Month. We're going to talk about the movie Black Panther, which I did see. I saw it. And I got to tell you, I'm not into much of action, those type of action food. They scare me. That's why. But but I liked it. I thought it was really good. So we're going to talk with Dominic Jones about that. And then we're in a very sad situation in the country. I mean, we're dealing with the issue that, unfortunately, our Congress can't get its act together, and the president can't seem to be consistent on what he wants to do about the situation with the 800,000 or so Dreamers, young people who are now young adults, but who were brought here when they were kids by their parents. They didn't choose to come here. They kind of were brought by their parents. And the president created a March 5th deadline whereby is going to end the program where they were able to stay here and work here. And so that's created an awful crisis. So we're going to speak about that a little bit later on in the show. Now, it's not exactly the same issue, but we're going to speak with somebody from the Southwest, a Father Tom Smith, who is at a retreat center there, which is offering hospitality to some of the people who are in danger of being deported. And I'm delighted that we're going to speak with him. So if you want to kind of follow a little bit more about what we do in Just Love, you can check out my blog, justloveblog.com, and you can follow me on Twitter at MSGRKSullivan, and you can learn a little bit more about the topics that we talk about here. But so let's now go to our first guest, Dominic Jones. I'm delighted that she is joining us on the phone. She's the executive director of Boys and Girls Clubs of Harlem. Dominic, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us on Just Love today.
Thank you so much for having me. We really appreciate being a part of the discussion.
That is so, so good. Now, you're not really, really a native New Yorker. You kind of wandered here after a while, didn't you?
I kind of wandered here, but it's been a long time.
Well, we're glad you did. We're glad you did. We're really glad that you did. Where'd you begin life in?
So I was born and raised in Dayton, Ohio.
Okay.
And I...
That's not a bit... That's a nice one of our suburbs, you know.
It's definitely a nice suburb with a great University of Dayton in our backyard. I attended Spelman College in Atlanta, Georgia. And after I completed my education there, I came to New York City.
Yay! We're glad you did.
Yay! To pursue my graduate studies. And from there, I've stayed. I had a stint where I left New York for a little bit, but I was so fortunate to come back to do great work that's meaningful to me. And ultimately, I ended up here in the Boys and Girls Club of Harlem, and it's been a blessing ever since.
Oh, that's wonderful. How long have you been at the Boys and Girls Clubs of Harlem?
It's been almost 3 years. It'll be 3 years next month.
So have you solved all the problems and all the issues there?
You know, I think that once you solve one thing, you're on to the next thing.
All right.
But there are challenges that are really often opportunities to ensure that we get more kids served with quality after-school programming.
So tell our listeners a little bit. I do want to get into the movie Black Panther and some of the things you're doing around that. But just give our listeners a little bit of an overview of the great work that Boys and Girls Club of Harlem is doing.
Well, thank you for that opportunity. Boys and Girls Club of Harlem, you know, we've been around over 37 years. We were founded by Convent Avenue Baptist Church, so very much out of the faith tradition of being kind of active in the community and serving young people. And we've been providing, you know, services, whether youth development services, for well over 37 years. This year, we are going into our 38th year with an enrollment of about 1,000 children in both in-school and out-of-school time programming. We do this programming at a number of sites. So we work out of New York City Department of Education Schools, New York City Housing Authority Community Center, and we're so blessed to have our own new facility, which we were able to cut the ribbon in fall of 2016, where we provide a range of services 6 days a week. In addition to having a Boys and Girls Club facility, the building also hosts 79 units of affordable housing.
Ah, great. Where's that located?
So we're on 145th Street between Broadway and Amsterdam.
Okay.
The historic public school 186.
Oh, great. So I'm delighted about that. So So let's now go into it, because as I kind of said a little bit earlier in the show, I did see the movie Black Panther this past weekend or so, and I loved it. I thought it was really great. And a little bit of a confession, those type of movies scare me too much.
Oh, no.
Yeah, they do. I don't like those big monsters coming.
Yeah, I can understand you.
Yeah, so I said, ooh, I get a little frightened by this. So anyway, but this movie has gotten a lot of resonance in a number of different communities, and
yes,
you've kind of done some work with the Boys and Girls Club of Harlem around this movie. Can you talk a little bit about that?
I definitely can. So, you know, we, as a part of our regular practice, we take young people to the movies as incentives, or if, you know, we think that it's going to be something of cultural significance. So we had planned to take a small group of kids to go see the movies. You know, over the holiday, I was kind of thinking about, okay, how, you know, making that plan and making sure that we could secure the resources to do that. Early in January, one of my staff received a phone call from a gentleman. His name is Frederick Joseph. And he said, well, I want to take 300 kids from Boys and Girls Club of Harlem to see the film. And I was like, oh, really? Are you going to do that? And he said, well, you know, he and some friends have begun raising money, and they did a GoFundMe campaign.
Oh, that's good. I thought you might have said he was going to sneak them in the back door.
No, not sneak them in the back door.
Okay.
But definitely, you know, raise the money, not just to get them a ticket to go to the movie, but to have the whole experience. So, you know, popcorn, soda, okay, you know, really be able to kind of just enjoy themselves.
All that good health food stuff that they sell at the movie.
All the healthy food that they can get access to. And so I said, well, you know, he said, you know, he had a GoFundMe campaign. His vision was to raise $10,000 to do that. You know, not only did he raise $10,000, but as of today, he's raised over $50,000.
Whoa!
And that was amazing, because, you know, not only could we, you know, get 300 kids to the movie, we could get way more. So I think this campaign got viral, and it became the Black Panther Challenge, hashtag the Black Panther Challenge. And producers at the Ellen Show got wind of his largesse and effort and brought him on the show to kind of thank him for, you know, making that commitment. And he was able to explain kind of why he wanted to do it, you know, what tools he was able to use to be able to engage other people in joining the campaign with him. And, you know, she was moved by his commitment and not only decided to, pay for all of our kids to go to see the film. She also said, well, you know, the money that he raised, you all can use the money for your programs.
Ah, that's great.
So it was definitely a great blessing to us, and Frederick has been a blessing, and Disney has been a blessing. So last Thursday, before the film went into wide release, we were able to bring 500 kids and adult chaperones at Magic Johnson Theaters in Harlem to see the film. And we, you know.
Hey, on Sunday morning, I got to tell you, on Sunday mornings, I used to go to the New York Sports Club that's right in the same building at the Magic Johnson Theater because it's one of the few New York sports clubs that opened at 7 o'clock on Sundays, so I could go there before I went to Mass.
Oh, well, there you go. You definitely have to get your workout in before you go to Mass.
Right.
Sure. Well, we were there on a Thursday, and kids from our school programs, from our main clubhouse, you know, marched into the theater. They had custom T-shirts that emanated kind of African dress. They were able to take photos, and then they went into the theater, and, you know, not only did they have that full-on experience, you know, they were embraced by the theater, embraced by the adult volunteers that were there to just really help them have the best and most memorable experience possible.
We're speaking with Dominique Jones, who is the executive director of Boys and Girls Clubs of Harlem, and we're speaking about a wonderful experience that they provided to a number of their young people, hundreds of their young people, to see the movie Black Panther, and kind of creative generosity of people in making it happen. Dominique, so I'd like to move on a little bit, because I've read a little bit of commentaries. I don't understand all of the commentaries, but I've read some stuff why this movie, among some, is very, very important to the Afro-American community because of the way that it portrays superheroes. Could you speak a little bit to that point?
Yeah, well, it you know, as I mentioned, we try to take kids to films that have cultural significance and that would really speak to them. And one of the reasons why this film, I think, is so important to us and important to the broader African-American community is that it's the first time we've seen a film of this scale that has, you know, all African-American cast in lead roles, antagonist and protagonist, behind the scenes. It's, you know, majority people of color with an African-American film director that, you know, is really telling a story of, you know, positivity and self-empowerment, self-determination. I think it's also about, you know, for the first time really seeing Africans, so to speak, on the continent, you know, really doing great things that are advancing technology, advancing the culture,
right,
and then also really being about supporting folks. Those are images that we know that happens in Africa, but are we really seeing that in the media scape,
right,
in the way that we would see, you know, others being doing that? So I think that this for us really was it was important for us to show our kids this so that they can envision themselves as empowered and self-determined. And then also for even adults to see that, because sometimes we kind of lose our way and think about kind of where do we sit in this world, who do we come from, what are our values, and I think that this film allows us to really see that and reconnect with it.
So I know, and I'll tell my answer after you tell yours. Who is your favorite character in the movie?
I think that my favorite, there's so many.
Okay.
But I think that, you know, all of the women, and I'm going to get their names all mixed up.
Well, I won't remember, so make it up.
All of the women lead characters, to me, represented what I know about African-American women just generally. We are fierce warriors. We protect the things that we value. We are advanced thinkers. We are, you know, we support, and then we also lead. You know, I think that I really felt that I saw every aspect of the character of some of the great women that I know and have come to admire in those particular characters.
So, Dominique, I know if I ever become big, famous, and important and I need, like, protection, I know who's going to be my god.
Yes.
She took no prisoners, let me tell you. And I don't remember her name. But I got to tell you, my favorite character in the whole thing was the lead character's sister.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
She had such playfulness to her, and if I might get a little serious for a moment, I thought was particularly good about her. She was the techie.
Yep.
And I thought about all of the need that we have to do the STEM stuff, the science, the technology, the education, particularly in communities of color where there may not have been the opportunities that there were in other communities. And I just thought she was such an attractive model of somebody who could be really into techie stuff, but also really human and a teenager, I would say.
Yes, I think you hit it right on the nail. She is the example of what is possible when you're unfettered with a lot of barriers to being able to get access to resources, instruction, support. Those are the things that we try to do here, is to make sure that kids not only are aware of science, technology, engineering, and math, but are actually engaged in it in really fun and interactive ways. And so when I see kids who are kind of struggling with some of the activities that we're doing, I can now point to Nuri, which is her character.
Oh, okay, good.
She is someone who is having fun with it and has begun to use this as a way to advance her country, advance her community. And that's a great example. And so I think you're right. But it shows that if you give kids and people access to something, they're going to do amazing things.
Now, I got to tell you, Dominique, how I got to betray a little bit of my own superficiality, because I got to tell you what my favorite line in the movie that she spoke was. Can you guess? And I'm telling you, it's really superficial, but I loved it. You guess.
Tell me.
Okay, so it's towards the end when the king brings them to California.
Mm-hmm.
And he brings him to the playground and he brings him to the neighborhood there. Mm-hmm. And she says to him, "When you said California, I thought we were going to Coachella." I thought that was
funny.
That was a really, really funny one. So tell me, did any, I know you only went last week, but every now and then when you're dealing with kids get into a zone and they sometimes get a little bit really, really deep about something. Any of the kids make comments on the film and they say anything to you that stuck with you?
We actually had a road trip with some of our teens the Saturday after the film, and a lot of the young people just spoke about how inspired they were to see, even though it's a fictionalized, Afrofuturistic kind of film, they were inspired and were thinking about how can they organize themselves as a group of teens to make change in their community. And so we're very excited that this is kind of a touch point for them to be able to see that they can drive the agenda for positivity. And we're seeing that across the country, that, young people have a voice, they have skills, they have talents, and our goal is to be able to help to nurture that and direct it in positive ways. But what I walked away from and what I've heard from young people is that they're ready to make positive action and positive change in their community. They want to create more opportunities to have people see them in positive light. They want to really, I think, not mirror the images that they've seen, but present more positive images in media, in community, and everything. And so that's been the inspiring thing for me as a leader of this organization. And I'm looking to figure out how do we how do we create more space and opportunities for them to do that?
Well, you know, one of the things I think which is really a plus, and it's just, I mean, it's the world that we live in. I mean, the fact that it has been such a, in the early days, such a great financial success.
Mm-hmm.
Should be saying to the people who, whatever their interests are, is that you can do stuff like this, and it also can be a commercial success in addition to, you know, pointing people in the right direction.
Yeah. We're hungry, you know, people of color are hungry to see images of themselves in film. And we'll not only come out, but we'll go out, you know, 2-3 times, tell our friends, you know, so that we can, you know, we can all share this kind of common experience. I can't tell you, my Facebook was flooded with pictures of friends and family going to see the film, wearing kind of African themed dress to the film, and just talk in the conversations and social media just spoke to how proud everyone felt, how you know, excited they were, not just about sharing the experience with their families, but also, you know, coming back and kind of talking more about it with their peers and others in other places. So, you know, this is a touchstone moment in our culture, but it should not be the last. And I hope that, you know, those that make decisions about films and other types of media really take note and be prepared to, you know, put more of that positive content out. I know we're looking at how do we create more opportunities for kids to learn how to develop this kind of positive content. And so, you know, we're going to catch fire in that way and make stuff happen. And I think that, you know, this has really been that guide for us.
Well, you know, that's fantastic. Mm-hmm. I think the other possibility is, because I saw the movie in one of the suburbs of New York, and the audience was pretty mixed. Mm-hmm. But I think it also provides a really good opportunity to create a little conversation among people of different cultures, different races, different communities, because it's not the ordinary movie that you see about Afro-Americans.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm fortunate enough to, our organization is really, truly reflective of the community that we're in. So we have, you know, kids from, you know, African-American kids, African, Latino, Caucasian, you know, we have a mix here. And so with our kids, they're starting dialogues with one another about kind of what the film means and kind of what those themes were about. You know, I also have a board of directors that is diverse as well. And so they attended the screening with our kids as volunteers. And so they're eager to have a conversation about how we can continue to promote diversity and inclusion in our work. You know, and I think that we want to begin to ensure that our space, our organization is a part of that dialogue and encourages that dialogue within the community. So, you know, I'm always happy. You know, I went to the movie on Thursday, but I had to actually go back and see it again.
Ah, okay.
Over the weekend. And so I went to another theater that had a much more diverse crowd than the first screening. And I saw the excitement that resonated with people all over, that represented all different cultures and backgrounds. Yeah. And I think it was about the theme. So it was about justice, about empowerment and self-determination. Those are the things that resonate with everyone.
Yep. Dominique Jones, thank you so much for taking the time to you have an invitation to come back if there's some particular program or something you want to talk about. You have an open invitation to come back and have another conversation with us.
Well, thank you so much. It's been such a great pleasure. Okay. And we definitely hope you come to visit the club one day, too.
I hope so, too. Dominique Jones, the Executive Director of Boys and Girls Clubs of Harlem. So why don't we, Tom, I think it's time for us to take a little bit of a break. And if you want to know more about what we're doing on Just Love, you can check out my blog at justloveblog.com. And you can follow me on Twitter at MSGRKSullivan. And you can learn a little bit more about the topics that we discuss. So we're going to be back in just a moment. This is just love God, just love your neighbor, just love yourself, and our world will be more just and it will be more compassionate. Join us when we come back on the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129. Welcome back to just love God, just love your neighbor, just love yourself. Our world will be more just and more compassionate. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. Thank you for joining us on Just Love. You want to know more about the topics we talk about? Check out my blog, justloveblog.org, or you can follow me on Twitter at MSGRKSullivan. Well, we are in the middle of Lent, and praying is a little bit what Lent is supposed to be about, a little bit more intensely, and it's like hanging with God. That's what I like to say. It's kind of just hanging out with God for a little while. That's what praying is. And, you know, sometimes it's hard. We don't know all the words to say. We're not quite sure what to say. Yeah, you know, sometimes we have things that we want to ask God for and talk to God about. And yeah, that's good. And we know that. But, you know, the other part of it is kind of listening to God. And sometimes it's a little bit hard to listen to God because, you know, we get impatient and God doesn't talk to us like I'm talking to you and you're hearing my voice. It's a little bit different. So I kind of say that I think daydreaming is not a bad way to wait on God. You know, you let your mind wander a little bit and you get distracted. You think about different things. But that provides an opportunity for God to kind of, you know, guide your mind to think about a few things which maybe you haven't. So, and dreaming is as important part in the scriptures. I mean, and it's an important part of salvation history. I mean, it was Joseph who was appeared to in a dream and told about Mary's special role in her conception of Jesus. And it was the wise men in the dream who were told that they should go back by another route. And so there's a lot of dreaming that has a really critical point in salvation history. And so I think dreaming is not a bad way to pray sometimes. Not always, but not bad just to sit there and kind of just let your mind wander a little bit. And, you know, maybe God has something that he wants to say. So, you know, if we hang with God a little bit more this Lent, let's let dreaming play a part in what we are, what we're about. You know, speaking about praying, not exactly the same thing, but preaching. You know, we lost this week one of the great figures in American Christianity, evangelist Billy Graham. And he died at age 99, didn't quite make it to 100, but he died at age 99. And he was arguably for decades probably the most well-known religious leader or clergy person in the United States. He was, and certainly well-known worldwide, too. He had a reputation for being very close to a number of different presidents. So let's kind of listen to just a little bit of him from 1957 at Madison Square Garden here in New York City. And he talks a little bit in his Lent. He talks a little bit about how there's a demand that Jesus makes, and not everybody always follows Jesus because there's a demand to the call of Jesus. Let's listen to that clip.
Jesus was busy eliminating people. Every time a crowd collected around Jesus and the crowd got too big, he said, wait a minute. He said, if you're going to follow me, you'll have to deny self. That eliminated one crowd. Then if the crowd was still too big, he'd say, if you're going to follow me, you'll have to take up a cross and follow me. Well, that eliminated most of the rest of them, because they didn't want to go to the cross. The cross was the electric chair. The cross was the gallows in that day. And Jesus said, if you're going to follow me, you'll have to take up your electric chair. You'll have to take up your place of execution, the unpopularity that comes with following me. And most people are not willing to do that. Most people are not willing to take their stand for Christ. Most people are not willing to stand up and be counted when it comes to surrendering to Christ. I ask you tonight, are you sure that you're a Christian? Are you sure that your sins are forgiven? Are you sure if you died you'd go to heaven? Are you sure that you're ready to meet God? In the strictest sense of the term, I ask you tonight, are you a Christian? Are you sure of it? If I had a doubt in my heart tonight that I was ready to meet God, you couldn't drag me out of Madison Square Garden till I'd settled it. Make sure. Give your life to Christ tonight. Come and receive him.
Well, that is a clear, good example of the power of Billy Graham's preaching. And what's more appropriate for Lent? Take up your cross, follow Jesus. And, I'm going to say it. I mean, one of my least favorite religious figures was Norman Vincent Peale. And I'll tell you why, because he kept on talking about the power of positive thinking. And it was, in my judgment, a little bit domesticated version, which underemphasized the cross. Now, no judgment, but that's just my kind of take on some of the ways that I thought his preaching and stuff came across. You can't say that about Billy Graham. You can't say that about Billy Graham. He really talked about the cross. He talked about follow Jesus. There was no apology for it. You know, some people criticized him for maybe being a little bit too close with some of the presidents and a little bit too tight with them. Well, okay, you can criticize that. But when you listen to his preaching, it certainly was about Jesus, and it certainly was about following the cross. And so that was a very, very powerful piece. And, you know, we'll keep him in our prayers, because we lost somebody who really was a stalwart preacher and raised up Jesus as an important part of our life. You know, we're getting to the end of the Olympics. And so I'd like to kind of pay a little bit of tribute to Lindsey Vonn, and just listen to her. She is one of the great downhill skiing racers, and everybody's kind of paying a lot of attention to her. And those of us who follow golf remember that for a while she was dating Tiger Woods, and that kind of brought her into the television in the summer, not downhill skiing. But this is her last Olympics, and she is really having a very, very good Olympics. Maybe not at the top, but she's having a great Olympics and is winning some medals. Let's listen to her interview that she gave just a few days ago on her downhill skiing performance.
I know your entire family is so proud of you. You have said this is your last Olympic downhill race. What memory will stand out the most to you?
I gave it my best shot, you know. I I tried so hard and I worked my butt off. And I'm so proud to have competed with such amazing girls. You know, my teammates have really supported me, and we've helped each other. Most of us have been injured pretty severely, so, you know, I'm really happy and proud to have been competing with them and to have their support, and it's been fun. It's been a fun ride, and I hope tomorrow I can maybe pull something out of the hat, but it's sad. This is my last downhill. I wish I could keep going, you know? I have so much fun. I love what I do. My body just probably can't take another 4 years, but I don't know. I'm proud. I'm proud to have competed for my country. I'm proud to have given it my all, and I'm proud to hopefully come away with a medal.
You've given every ounce of yourself to this sport, Lindsay. Thank you, and congratulations on all your successes.
Thank you.
Well, that was a very emotional interview that was done with Lindsay Vaughn, and I'm not exactly sure when the interview was done, but she did win a bronze medal. Not the gold, but she won a bronze medal. What I thought was very interesting, Tom, about that was obviously it was about her own effort, her own discipline and hard work, giving it her all. But she also spoke about her teammates, how proud she was to be with the other members of her team. And she talked about, you know, being proud to do it for her country. And to me, it seems like that's a really good expression of patriotism. You know, sometimes, and we've talked about this on the show, I think some expressions of patriotism by some go over the top. And I think they are kind of America first before everybody else and the rest of the country puts down. But the way she expressed it is just proud for her country. Well, that's, to me, absolutely appropriate, absolutely, you know, the right way to feel, that there is a sense of loyalty to where you come from. And that's a very, very important part of it. So I just think it was a really nice interview and a nice Olympics for her, and I'm delighted we were able to. I do find it a little bit interesting and strange that she kind of thinks she's over the hill at age 33 or 34 and she can't do it, but the Olympics are a very young person's sport when it comes especially to, you know, gymnasts and others. Boy, that is in the upper echelon of the age categories as you move forward. So let's take a break. And when we come back, we're going to speak with Father Tom Smith, the director of the Holy Cross Retreat Center in New Mexico. We're going to speak about the Franciscan notion of hospitality. If you want to learn more about what we talk about, check out my blog, justloveblog.com. Follow me on Twitter, MSGRK. Sullivan, and you can follow a little bit more of the topics that we talk about here. We'll be back in just a moment. This is Just Love. Just do it. Just love God. Just love your neighbor. Just love yourself. Our world will be more just and more compassionate. This is the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129. Welcome back to Just Love. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. Just Love. God, neighbor, self. Our world will be more just and more compassionate. You can follow me on Twitter at MSGR. K. Sullivan, or check out my blog, justloveblog.com. You learn more about the topics that we are talking about here on Just Love each week. Well, I'm delighted that we're going to speak now with Father Tom Smith, who is a Franciscan, the director of Holy Cross Retreat Center in New Mexico. And Father Tom Smith, thank you so much for joining us on Just Love.
You're most welcome. Good to be with you.
Good. Thanks for taking the time. So I got one little question I got to ask you, and this is me. I'm just one of those kind of dumb, unholy diocesan priests, so I don't know all this stuff. But what's this conventional Franciscan thing?
It's actually conventual.
Oh.
U-A-L, not I-O-N. Oh. In the history of the Franciscan Order, there have been different reforms, and there are now three major branches. Conventual, we used to live in conventos, the name for a friary in Europe, OFM Friars Minor, and the Capuchins. It's just one of the three major branches.
Okay, we got it. I'll probably forget it, but now I know it for the next 10 minutes or so. So anyway, hey, thanks so much. The reason why kind of we asked you to be on the show is because we're going through a little bit of crisis, or a major crisis, in terms of immigration in this country. And there are people doing a variety of different things to try to protect and to try to help immigrants, and so many different things. Many are providing legal services. Many are providing other types of counseling for them. And yet, and in addition to that, there are actually those who are providing some places for people who are in danger of being deported, for them to actually live. And the retreat house where you are the director in New Mexico is one of those places. Talk to us a little bit about that.
I have worked with 10 years with the immigrants, mostly undocumented, in Louisville, Kentucky, and southern Indiana before moving to New Mexico. So I'm well aware of the struggles that can bring. Excuse me, this past year that has gotten more serious because of the change on the national level. And so we have chosen to provide some space at the retreat center here for those in fear of imminent deportation. And we have Jorge Taborda and his son Stephen, and Lorena Rivera and her daughter Bella, who are staying with us now, because it seems like we needed more than just pray for them or call our representatives and do those kind of things. We felt they needed direct care as well.
And I think you particularly like to talk about what you're doing in terms of ministry and a vocation of Franciscan hospitality.
Yeah.
Now, other places have used a word like sanctuary.
Right.
Talk to us a little bit about that.
We chose consciously not to use the word sanctuary, even though effectively it's the same thing that others are doing, because sanctuary is not a legal term in the sense that means it's safe, and the immigration officials cannot come here. And I did not want to mislead people. But then secondly, because we are doing this out of a choice that it comes from the gospel and from our Franciscan life. St. Francis chose to become a poor man and live with the poor, to serve the poor. And the gospel obviously talks about welcoming the aliens and the strangers and those in need. And so for us, it's a faith issue that has political implications, and it's not specifically a political issue.
You know, I was speaking with Father Tom Smith, who is the director of the Holy Cross Retreat Center. And I'm going to get this wrong. He is a conventual Franciscan. Did I get that right?
You got it right.
Hey, okay. I have probably a great deal of empathy for the position that you take, because and I understand the sanctuary movement throughout the country, and I think it's good that there are places that are doing sanctuary, because I think it's a prophetic witness, and as with most prophetic witnesses, it makes a statement, it calls attention. It's not the total solution, but I think it's good that people raise it up. But I do think it's one way of doing that, And as you say, it really doesn't have any legal status, and we wouldn't want to mislead people that they were, you know, protected simply because they were in a church, although at least up till now, fortunately, we still have a directive by the federal government that they're not going to go into houses of worship, religious churches. They're not going to go into hospitals and places like that, but that could change overnight. So
that is true. Yeah, we're well aware of that.
Yeah, and so tell me a little bit the experience of the families. I mean, how are they doing?
Well, there's good days and discouraging days. Jorge joined us in May of last year. He was from Colombia. He and his wife came 19 years ago from Colombia seeking asylum because of the violence there. They petitioned with their young son to stay, eventually were denied. But they ended up staying here, and they had, by that time, Social Security numbers, and so they have worked and been very active. He's a very active member of the Red Cross and other things, besides working his own job. He gets very excited at times that maybe this is going to work out. His wife has already been deported, but that maybe they can get together again. And other days he gets discouraged because it's been so long, and he doesn't know if it's really going to get official permission to stay. But he's really a fine man. He was a university professor of Spanish in Colombia, very sharp and knows bilingual. He helps, and I invited him to speak at retreats and talk to groups here on a regular basis. He's really a fine man. The other, Lorena, is a woman who has a young daughter, 9 years old, and was threatened with departure, but she said she wants to stay here to support her daughter, who needs a little extra care. And so she's just very, very supportive and very kind. They're both faith-filled people, participate regularly with us in prayer services and stuff, and we're delighted to have them here. And they active, help out and do things. So it's not just staying and sitting around, but they're engaged in things as well.
Well, that's really positive. But I think I do think, and not to say anything negative about the people who provide sanctuary, but I do think it seeing it as kind of more of a ministry growing out of Franciscan ministry, and that it's hospitality more than sanctuary, I think, you know, pushes a little bit in that direction of it being more than just kind of a place to hide out. It's a place to kind of engage others.
That's right. Actually, when we first started, we were keeping a very low profile and sort of hiding him here.
Right.
Of course, that was awkward because he's well-known in the city.
Right.
He'd been lived here for 18 years, and some people would come to the retreat house and go, oh, I know them, and he'd try to kind of avoid. And then we decided, after consulting with Clinic, National
right.
Catholic Legal Immigration Services and another group called PICO, that publicity was actually to our favor because they're less likely they're going to come if they're public, and so I couldn't be arrested for harboring a fugitive.
Right.
So it's made it much more public, and so they greet people all the time. People come to see them, and you know, it's nothing to hide in that sense, and they can be more actively engaged, and that's a good thing.
Yeah, there is a church here in New York City, Episcopalian, that is offering sanctuary to a Catholic mom and her kids, and I went to visit them a little while ago, and it's a very different situation because there's not a community there, and it's a little bit hard, and there are up days and down days, and the future is very, very uncertain. So it's while I say that I think there is a prophetic role to sanctuary, it certainly is a hard way that people have to live because it's just so out of the ordinary of their lives. So it is difficult for them.
Sure it is.
And
they would like to go other places and do things, but people can come see them, but they can't go. And we don't. I can't promise them. And I think that actually the chances are slow or low that they're going to get an official legal permission to stay here. We're still working on it. We're still trying
right.
different methods. But it's a tough thing. It's just, in this climate, it's just very difficult to
yeah,
get that.
Yeah, it is. So listen, Father Tom Smith, I want to thank you for spending the time with us on Just Love, and thank you for the ministry of hospitality that you are extending there to those two families who are there. And thanks so much for being with us.
You're most welcome. We're happy to do so.
Great.
Father, the Lord continues to guide us in this effort.
Well, I'm pretty certain the Lord will. So
okay.
Father Tom Smith, the director of the Holy Cross Retreat Center in New Mexico, and there are two families there to whom the retreat center is extending Christian hospitality. Tom, tell us a little bit about what young people are doing in light of the tragedy of the school violence and the deaths in Florida.
Sure, Monsignor. Well, you know, as we're all aware, there was the terrible tragedy this past week ago when 17 people were killed at Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School down in Parkland, Florida. And that gun violence, however, has wound up encouraging younger people to take matters into their own hands. And they are actually planning, hundreds of them are planning on doing a peaceful walkout in Middlemarch to ask Congress to act on meaningful mental health care legislation to get gun control legislation passed. And this past Tuesday and Wednesday, hundreds of students from Douglas High School in Parkland went up to Tallahassee to speak to their state senators and members of the Florida House of Representatives to get active gun legislation passed. So it seems that, Monsignor, that this has been a catalyst and that many of these young people have taken it upon themselves that when they've had this terrible experience to tell us about it and then to encourage us as the adults to take the mantle and to move forward with this.
Well, you know, when I was listening to our first guest speak about how the movie Black Panther was motivating some of the young people to make positive change, I thought about this. And I also remember, I'm old enough to remember that it was a lot of young people that were involved in some of the movement about the war in Vietnam. And so, you know, maybe we have a situation in which young people might be able to make some positive changes where some of the traditional movements have not. And the one thing I do want to say is I just can't understand why as a country we can't, and I'll say it, walk and chew gum at the same time. I mean, obviously guns are a problem, but gun control is not the complete solution. Mental health is an issue. And dealing with mental health is part of the solution. Why can't we look at the right way to control guns? And why can't we look at the way to provide more mental health services at the same time? We don't have to take one side or the other because together they are important ways to deal with things. So you know what I want to do, Tom? And I want to just, we're in the Lenten season of celebration, and we're in the time when we look at what's going on in the world, and we're talking about generosity. And again, there's a lot of sacrifice we talk about in Lent, and I just want to juxtapose a few things. And maybe some people are not going to like this, but you know, I caught in the news the other day that that Kim Kardashian had a Hermes diaper bag that cost $23,000. And, you know, I looked it up. I had somebody look it up. And that could pay 1 year's rent for a middle-class family with a two-bedroom apartment. You know, I saw that Paris Hilton had a $65,000 Swarovski crystal Birkin bag. Well, in Jacksonville, Florida, you could have a family in a modest two-bedroom a house for 4.5 years. It seems to me that, okay, enough of that. But it seems to me that I'm delighted when people have nice things and it's good. But there's got to be a little bit of proportionality in saying that, you know, the things we kind of look at and we think they're attractive, but it's not good enough when people are struggling, when some people don't even have a place to live. So anyway, I point that out not to necessarily pick on people, but just to show the disparities that we do in life and some of the basics some people are struggling with and other people are able to have a lot more. And, you know, when we talk about a discipline of Lent, some of it is for in our own lives to say, well, what do I really need? Not that I can't have a little bit of extras, but do I really need to have a lot of extras? And is there a discipline I need to exercise on myself so that maybe I live a simpler life and there can be a better way for others to live. So, hey, thanks for being with us on Just Love. Just do it. Love God, love your neighbor, yourself. Our world will be more just and more compassionate. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. Follow me on Twitter at MSGRKSullivan and my blog, justloveblog.com. The Catholic Channel, SiriusXM 129.
Listening to the Catholic Channel, SiriusXM 129.